Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Take Off, a Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. We're doing something a little bit different today, which is a compilation style episode. So we've pulled together some of our favorite tips and insights from previous episodes, all focused around one topic, which today is family travel with Points and Miles. So whether you're trying to book flights for the whole crew, find the right hotel for your family trip, or just get more out of your points and miles in general when you're traveling with kids, we've pulled some of our best conversations to help you do exactly that. All of the original episodes will be linked in the show notes, so if there's a topic that catches your ear, you can always go deeper that way. One quick note before we get started. Many of the conversations are pulled from older episodes, so some of the program details like transfer rates, partners, award rates, card benefits, those types of things may have changed since they were originally published. So it's always good practice to double check and confirm the details before you book anything. All right, with that said, let's jump in.
What's the kind of framework that you go through when planning travel? You know, walk us through how you typically start planning a trip, deciding on options, the flexibility, must-haves, nice-to-haves, just like, what's that thought process like for you?
Yeah, sure. So typically, I'm usually working within the confines of a time frame. You know, my kids do traditional school, so we're not homeschooling or anything like that. I've got, you know, kids in travel baseball, which if anybody else out there knows, like, it's incredibly time consuming. So I worked, you know, I kind of have to look at the time periods I have available and then work backwards from there. So a lot of times I don't have a specific destination in mind. I'm like, you know, okay, so, you know, I know a couple of the things we're going to talk about are over spring break. I'm like, okay, I have this week to work with. It's very hard for me to say, I'm just going to go here. I usually just look at that time frame and then kind of do some searches and see what's available. Like, what where can I do with my points, you know, for the least amount of points, but also, you know, the most convenient route too, because if I've only got a week, it's not like I can, you know, go to Southeast Asia. For instance, I need more time. So being in Florida, I'm kind of lucky in that respect. We're so close to the Caribbean and Central America and some different places. That way I, you know, I can say, okay, let me look at this whole general area and see where I can find the best flight. And then usually once I find the flight, then I kind of work backwards and say, okay, now what am I going to do in this place? And work.
Yeah.
That all comes
later. Yeah.
So it sounds like it's less of kind of getting your heart set on a destination, trying to make that place happen, and just being open to where points are going to take you.
Exactly.
I think one of my favorite features of a few of the like award search tools is the anywhere feature, or like the explore feature on a few of them, is like you just put in airports you want to leave from and then type in anywhere or everywhere. I forget exactly how some of them work, but it gives you so many options and it really changes the way you think about being restricted to a time period, because now you can just see, oh, here are like a ton of options I can think about. And then maybe I'm not competing with everyone else on spring break who's trying to go to Cancun at the same time.
Exactly. Or sometimes like with the kids, I'll look and I'll either go to the airport website or I'll go to, I think it's flight.connections, and just see who has direct flights out of there, and then kind of go to those places and first and see what I can find to make it a little bit easier.
Yeah. So working around these schedules when, let's face it, everyone's wanting to travel, do you find you're often booking, you know, like we said, a year out or more last minute or somewhere in between, or it all just depends?
Usually all last minute. I have a really hard time making decisions, and, you know, I'll go back and forth to decide what is the right move for me, or, you know, sometimes I don't always know my exact schedule. So I always book things last minute. I think, you know, I'm talking 2 or 3 weeks before most of the time, because I can't make up my mind. I just know I want to go somewhere, and I wait and see what kind of deals I can get last minute. I think the only exception to that is like, you know, Emily and I were talking earlier, you know, we do a ski trip. We usually try to go every year, sometimes every other year. And that I will try to book out further just because it's a peak time and it's harder to get hotels during that time necessarily. So, and other than that, like I'm talking anywhere from a week to maybe a month beforehand is usually when I actually book.
Separate from just the actual technical side of doing that, I feel like one part that, like, as I'm thinking about last minute travel that's often missed, and maybe this is just me and y'all are going to tell me that I'm crazy, is also just that, like, emotional excitement. Like, I know when I first book a trip, I'm so excited to put everything together and figure out what we're going to do. But after, like, a few weeks, it kind of dies down a little bit until the trip comes, versus with this last minute, maybe it's just me and I'm crazy or something. Like, that feels like it would give me the whole time of excitement. Yeah. Because it's all of this work, you know where you're going to go, now you're figuring out what you're going to do, and then you just get to go and do it instead of wait for it to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And it keeps me from overanalyzing everything, because, you know, if I have a trip that's booked too far out, I mean, I will continue to look at, oh, maybe I'll find this better hotel, maybe I'll find this better, I will look and look and look for, you know, the entire 9 months ahead of time. Whereas booking last minute, I'm like, okay, I got to make plans and I got to make them fast. And there's no, like, second guessing myself. So,
yeah. If there's anything about Points and Miles people, it's that we are all over analyzers. So I think we're all in the same boat. Like, I'm, it's a classic move of, like, the day before your trip, is there anything else that I could book that's better? I'm looking to put myself through a little more stress before I leave on my trip. So how, when you're kind of booking last minute like that, waiting to see what pops up, how do you set yourself up from, like, a points earning perspective to make sure that you can book whatever shows up? Do you, like, focus on specific like airline programs or hotel programs, or is everything just transferable for you?
Very, very rarely. I'm always opening new cards. I'm always earning points in all of the different arenas. Obviously, flexible currency is ideal. But then sometimes, you know, I don't have, you know, I see a better bonus on, you know, something that's more hotel specific. So I kind of jump on that bandwagon. I like to have a lot of hotel branded cards for some of my local travel that I do. And, you know, I like to have a bank everywhere. So most of the time I never open a card with the trip in mind. Like, I'm literally just trying to open as many as I can to get as many points as I can, so I can use whatever when I need it.
Yep. Yeah. I mean,
sounds like, and I think this is one of the things that people overthink sometimes, is sounds exactly like, whether you're family traveling or, you know, even solo traveling, having that cache of flexible points is really what gives you that option, those options, and doesn't tie you in. Really, the difference is you might just need some more.
Yeah.
Yep.
Are there discounts or perks for kids, like Flying Blue's 25% discount for children under 12, or booking a second Hyatt room at a discount? I guess from each of your perspectives, are there any particular kind of loopholes or strategies that you involve with, you know, related to award pricing that are unique to children or families?
So, yeah, I think I've definitely taken advantage of the Flying Blue award discounts a lot. My daughter is now 11, which means it's, like, the last year that she can take advantage of those. So that's going to sting. But I really love that aspect of their program. And we have also taken advantage of the Hyatt family room rates, where you can get a discounted second room, which we definitely need with a family of five, especially in Europe. So that's really great too. I think one of the other aspects that can be really helpful, especially for families, is, like, the family pooling from miles. So a lot of the airlines will allow you to pool miles. I believe Air France and KLM do this for Flying Blue. United does it as well. So does JetBlue, and I think maybe even Southwest. So, you know, there's a lot of programs where that can really help you to put your miles together, especially if you're, you know, each person is earning points when they're flying, but you get, you know, 1,000 points at a time. It's going to take you a long time to be able to redeem that for anything meaningful. But when you can pool all those points together, you might get a free ticket a lot faster. So I think that's really helpful.
Yeah, and it's been wonderful to see more airlines kind of jumping on that train the last 5 years or so. It used to be almost non-existent. Now it's getting there. Ray, what about you?
Yeah, I think I would echo the Flying Blue. That's really the only one that's consistent, you know, with the kids 25% off award flights. We also took advantage of that. We're going to Europe next year, and we're able to get all five of us in economy for 85,000 points, which is a steal. So beyond that, there are sometimes promotions that some airlines will do, but it's not consistent. So when I am strategizing a trip, like I never plan on it. And if it happens, you know, then it's a bonus. But when I'm earning points, I'm planning to pay whatever the full price is.
Gotcha. How about Southwest Companion Pass? Are either of you Companion Pass holders? Have you ever had one before? How do you kind of think about that?
Yes, my husband and I currently each hold a Southwest Companion Pass. It will expire at the end of this year, and we will not attempt to earn it again until the end of 2025. And that was kind of done strategically. I think the Companion Pass is the biggest game changer for families of four or more. Like, especially if you have a P2, you should each be getting one. And we specifically opened the cards and did the whole thing and then planned our trips for the next 2 years around where Southwest flies to. And so we've done Hawaii a couple times, Costa Rica, Washington, D.C., actually, which is where Katie lives. And then next year, we're focusing more on international travel because we won't have the companion passes then. So yes, plus 1,000 to the companion pass.
And especially if you live in Phoenix, I imagine you probably have one of the best route networks of any airport for Southwest. So I'm envious as a Columbus, Ohio resident. We have like, you know, 12 choices.
Well, Phoenix doesn't do a lot right when it comes to international flights from our airport, believe it or not, but Southwest is a good sweet spot. Yeah.
Agreed. Katie, how about you? Companion Pass, is that something that's been in the cards for you?
So we do not have the Companion Pass yet. I think we're actually doing it opposite of Raya. So we have been focusing mostly on international travel up to this point. Kind of after COVID, you know, everybody was itching to, you know, leave the country and go see all the other places. So we've really been focusing on that quite a bit. And so Southwest didn't necessarily work out as well into our plans. But also, you know, BWI is really the hub for Southwest, and we're closer to a couple of the other metro area airports. So it's a bit of a drive for us also. So definitely, you know, when we do decide to get the Companion Pass, which might be the end of next year, we will be, you know, planning our travel accordingly.
Nice. Love the yin and yang there. Take turns with the award space domestically and internationally. That works out super well, at least for this group of three. In terms of like booking these award seats for families of five, right? That's what kind of makes it difficult. And our readers certainly feel that. They look at the solo travelers who grabbed like the last second, like, oh, there's one first class seat and it was only 10,000 points. And they're like, how do I do this? So I'm curious how each of you kind of think about award space for families of your size, any particular like strategies, tactics that you employ to find it, and just advice that you'd have for folks who struggle with that situation.
I think one thing for our family, at least, is we've been mostly focused on economy flights. We haven't taken our kids in business yet. It's just too cost prohibitive to have that many, you know, tickets in business, and our kids are still fairly young and wouldn't fully appreciate the experience. So we're kind of holding off on that. We do have a business trip planned for just me and my husband next year, but that'll be each of our first time in business also. So we're very excited for that. But I think, you know, sticking in economy, we haven't had too much of an issue, honestly, finding that much award space. I'm sure it's much harder, you know, in business and up, but for the economy flights, you know, we have been fortunate enough to find, you know, five seats on all the flights that we needed. And in one case, we even got seven saver awards. My parents were coming with us on that trip, so that was great. I think the thing that helps us the most is planning in advance. You know, we are not able to just, you know, leave at any point with the kids' schedules. You know, if I do see a great deal, most of the time we're not able to just jump on it because they have to be here for some event over the weekend, or they're going to miss too much school or something like that.
We also fly predominantly in economy for a lot of the reasons Katie said. One of my concerns with the way that we travel and how often is my kids becoming entitled. And I almost feel like flying in economy is a way to keep them humble, you know? So that's part of how I think of it. And the other thing too is, I think as a family, you just have to think like, what are your travel goals? And if it's one huge bougie trip a year and you can earn the points to do that, then I say do it. For us, that's not our goal. I want to take 2 to 3 big-ish trips a year. And the way that we can do that with the spending power that we have is to fly economy. And so I've also never had a problem finding five economy seats. So
that's amazing. And I think that might come as a surprise to some folks who are like, I can never find this. And I do think economy is kind of the secret there. It is certainly easier to find a larger number of award tickets in general, but particularly at saver level in economy, it gets dramatically harder for business and it's almost impossible for first. And I completely identify with your concerns around like, how do we handle this with kids? Because we, you know, my family, my wife and I have recently, a large percentage of our travel with our kids is happening in premium cabin on points. And we do struggle with that where when it's economy, the kids are kind of upset. And it's like so hard to kind of level set with them and explain like, this is not typical. And like, we're kind of splurging here and like, we're going to be in economy next time. And there, a quick story I'll tell, and I don't know if I've shared this on the podcast before, even at one point we were at the zoo and like waiting in line to like pet a snake. And my daughter like tugs on my sleeve and she's like, Daddy, do we have status? Like, can we skip this line? I'm like, all right, we officially have a problem. We need to address this. The next three flights are in economy. We've got to get back to baseline here. So same with like lounges. Like we have to sit down in an airport restaurant. So he's like, oh, where's the lounge? Why can't we go to the lounge? It's like, okay. I'm curious to see how they kind of transition into adulthood with that experience as children.
Yeah, my oldest has asked if we got an upgrade whenever we're at a hotel because my husband had globalist status. We're going to lose it in February. But I've started trying to prepare them. You know, they're like, are we going to get free breakfast at this hotel and all these things? I'm like, those things are not normal. So they're going to go back to the way it used to be.
Super clutch for families, though, right? Like when you're traveling, definitely. The free breakfast, I feel like, save you a couple $100, depending on where you're going, especially when kids order a $30 waffle and have two bites of it. You know,
it's especially with my kids.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's the tip in and of itself, Hyatt with status, free breakfast for kids. Are there any other kind of hotel awards or bookings that you tend to do that in your experience come with other fringe benefits that might be particularly good for families?
We have strategized getting globalist status this year simply because we have so many nights booked with Hyatt next year. So that was also done on purpose. But I have going back to the entitled kids, I do have a funny story. So we stayed at the Hyatt Regency Huntington Beach over Labor Day weekend, and I had booked a suite, which I don't normally do. I normally do one room like in the US, but this was a suite and it was all they had available. And so I splurged and we did it. And I was telling the kids like, oh, we're getting a suite, right? Like I'm pumped, this is gonna be great. And we walk in and first of all, it's huge. Like it's huge. My oldest, who's 10, was like, wait, this is it? Like, this is the suite? And I was like, yeah, isn't this great? And he was like, it's just not what I was expecting. And I'm like, well, what were you expecting? And he starts describing like some penthouse apartment he's seen on YouTube. And so I thought, okay, like, fair. Like, I didn't clarify to you what a suite was. And like, he had much grander expectations, I guess, than what it really was. So he was disappointed, but I was not.
Yeah, I've certainly had some of that too. It seems like any hotel that's not basically equivalent of like Kevin McAllister at the Ritz surrounded by room service is like, what's this? Like, is there better rooms? Like, can we get a different one? But when you do get them, boy, is it a lot of fun with the kids when there's multiple rooms and then kind of run around and play hide and seek in a totally new location. That's a fun aspect of family travel for me. Starting with just kind of best programs for family perks. The first one that comes to mind, and no surprise here to anyone, like what's the favorite hotel program of 10X Travel for X segment? Hyatt, right? I think that Hyatt is top of the list here, best for family travelers. You got the elite status perks, you know, free breakfast, confirmed suite upgrades, huge when you're traveling with multiple people. But kind of more importantly, like larger base room sizes at many brands. Like I can't think of a Hyatt I've stayed at recently where it's like, wow, this room is quite small. Usually quite spacious, you know, Hyatt Place, Hyatt House, you have the ones that are kind of designed for a little bit more room to run around. And Hyatt also has a family plan rate where you can book a second room at 50% off the standard rate. Now there's some nuances to be aware of that we'll talk about here, but that's super clutch because I know like one of the big decisions in front of families who are booking hotels is always like the, do we do multiple rooms? Do we do like conjoined rooms, a suite? Do we try to like sneak the kids in and say there's only two people in his room? Like, you know, especially if you're in like Europe or Asia trying to book a room. So that's kind of the first and biggest decision. And Hyatt does make this a little bit easier with that family plan rate. Now, the first room can be booked on points, but the second one always has to be cash. So you just pay 50% of the nightly rate of a standard cash rate for that property. Not all properties participate. That's going to be kind of a theme for a lot of these perks we're going to talk about. Like, wow, sounds great. Can't expect it everywhere. It's hit or miss. And this isn't really like that prominent in their marketing. As I was kind of doing research for this, it's almost like a feels like a outdated promotional page. You're like, oh, this is still live? Like, am I supposed to find this? It's hit or miss, but there's no ability to search these online. You have to call,
yeah.
Which, like, come on, like that's kind of ridiculous. So really, like, the approach is almost find the place that you want to stay first and then call and see if they have this available. If they do, great. If not, back to the drawing board. So it's a perk that's out there. It's not as reliable as we want it to be for families, but it's something that if you know a place that you go back to over and over, and you're, especially if you're using points to book that first room, pretty clutch way to save money and spread out about the kids.
Yeah, from what I've heard about it, it's one of those, they offer it, but it's not really a published thing. So when you call in, you might also get an agent who's not familiar with it. So don't be afraid to hookah, hang up and call again.
Well, if it's a hotel, you'll be the same person, probably the front desk. Like, hello again. Like, hi, did you figure this out in the last 10 seconds? No?
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, don't be afraid to call again, see if you get someone else. Like, there's enough discussion about it. I don't necessarily have the personal experience, obviously, as a non-family traveler. Is that one?
Boom. Yep, you got it.
To have personally experienced it, but from what I've read, it's decently reliable, you know, especially if you're just calling the general Hyatt line. But there's a chance that someone doesn't know about it or know how to do it, and that you might need to find someone else. I agree with you, and I know that some people think that we might just be overly evangelical for Hyatt, but the perk to me to not really overlook that makes Hyatt really nice is the published award rates for suites that you mentioned. Even if you don't need a full separate room, just having that dedicated separate space can probably be a really nice perk to have. And the fact that you can book that with points directly is just a really nice perk that shouldn't be overlooked. One of the pieces of advice that I like to give to people is, you know, don't count on your status. Don't count on your elite benefits. If you need the suite or you need the extra room, book what you need. And otherwise you're just gambling. And I can't tell you how many times I've probably should have been given a suite per the terms and I don't get upgraded to it. And I don't even need the extra space. It's just kind of one of those, come on, you have some available during my dates with my status. I know that you should, I'm not gonna fight you on it, but if it was kind of the make or break for your trip, you should probably book it outright. And even though you can book them with other programs, the published award rate for it based on the category of property, yes, there's low, standard, and peak pricing as well, but you can plan for it. I think that's probably the key, is that you can plan for the amount of points that you need in advance. And honestly, it's not that outrageously expensive compared to
this. It's really not.
It's like maybe 50 to 100% more, which sounds like a lot, but you know, at some properties you're talking 30,000 versus 20,000 points. You can plan for it whenever you're accumulating the points for your trip. So that way you can get what you need for sure. So it gives you that flexibility between the family plan rate, if you're willing to say, points are helping us with some of it and we'll save cash on the second room, or no, let's go full points, but instead of two rooms, let's get a suite instead. Like, it's overall a win-win and gives you that flexibility. Cause I imagine for people with younger kids, they probably don't want the separate room. They probably would prefer the suite. So it gives you that flexibility there. Whereas, you know, if your kids are a bit older, a little bit more responsible and trustworthy, which I'm sure everyone's kids are, then you can do the separate rooms. Yeah, if you want. But it gives you that flexibility, and that's nice to have.
Yeah, I feel like that in the suites, there's kind of some nuance to that too, because the situation that I think many traveling families have been in, or should I say as a family traveler for, is the you have young kids, you have a hotel room, could be a suite or otherwise, but there's not a separate bedroom. Kids go to bed at, I don't know, 8 o'clock, 8:30, whatever your kids are, adults don't, what are you gonna do? So you're either sitting there in the dark, in the, you know, laying in bed, like what, playing with your phone, or hiding in the bathroom, like after the kids go to bed, and like drinking wine out of styrofoam cups. But it's just like, that is kind of like what you're trying to get, is like separate sleeping schedules for adults and kids. And being able to book that suite up front is helpful. And you know, you mentioned like that you never fight them on it when you think that there might be an upgrade. I actually am just reminded of a time that I did fight them on it, and it worked. I was at a wedding in San Diego. There's a Hyatt in Mission Bay, I think it's called. And I got a guest of honor cert that I was using. Had two standard rooms booked, going to check in, asked, you know, do you have any suite upgrades available? And like, guest of honor should be treated as a globalist. They're like, no, you don't. And I whip around my Hyatt app and I'm like, that's funny, because you're selling one tonight that I would really love. And they gave it to me.
Nice. Like,
I'm either going to get kicked out of the hotel or upgraded, but to avoid the whole drinking wine in the shower with a plastic cup scenario, I'm willing to risk it. And I did, and it paid off. So,
you know,
that worked.
Family of four, including round trip flights and hotel for 100,000 points. We're going to Orlando for 3 or 4 days at the theme park. I don't know. It sounds like a great American vacation if I've ever heard of one.
Yeah.
How are we getting there? We live in the Southeast, so we'll take the Delta flights from Atlanta to Orlando. You can book these for 5,500 miles per person each way, but not with Delta SkyMiles. Those will run anywhere from 10 to even upwards of 30,000 SkyMiles per person each way for the same flights. So we're gonna transfer our points over to Flying Blue and book them that way. You'll pay about 10 or 11 bucks per person each way in taxes and fees. So nowhere near what Emily's Flying Blue experience was going to cost. or I guess that was Virgin, but still close enough. So here, just quick little highlight on the potential value of simple transfer and alliance partners. Understanding those allows you to save a ton of miles on the flights for literally booking the exact same seats and the exact same flights.
Yep. Yeah.
22 or 44,000 points total for a family of four.
Round trip. Yeah.
Yeah. That's solid.
Yeah.
Cash prices here range roughly $200 a person. Obviously that can vary. So giving you, if you're into the cents per point, gets pretty close to 2 cents per point here, which is a great value. So other option, travel portals, depending on things, kind of like Travis was looking at, found flights on Frontier for as low as $85 and Spirit for $92. So you could, in theory, book these at a travel portal or use like a, you know, purchase eraser type benefit on some of your cards. Mm-hmm. So if you were to go the purchase eraser type, that'd be $8,500 or $9,200 round trip per person. So even lower, but kind of like we talked about earlier with Travis, both Frontier and Spirit are low-cost carriers, so there's literally hidden costs everywhere. Carry-on, seat selection, breathing the oxygen on the plane, anything and everything and more, you're going to have to pay for it. So while on the surface, those points options look even better, if you can meet essentially like literally no, if you have your own Spirit bag, then this could be an option. But otherwise, it's probably not going to be a cost savings. One other thing to factor in here too is one of the many ways that these low cost carriers typically are able to operate is because they're flying at like non-peak times. So, you know, think 8, 9, 10 p.m. departures and even later arrivals, or 5, 6, 7 a.m. departures and arrivals. So, you know, family of four going on to and from vacation, that may, from a practical standpoint, not be a great solution here. Pay a few extra 1,000 points for some more flexibility.
I feel like if I was a family of four, like 8,500 points per person to fly Frontier Spirit versus 11,000 to fly Delta on a main classic ticket, I'd take the Delta one, because like you said, it's probably a better time. You should get to select seats, like at least like standard seats, without having to pay for them, which Frontier and Spirit you won't. You'll get a carry-on instead of having to have a Spirit bag. like, it's a small, I almost said Delta, but it's a small Delta in points paid. But like, when you're traveling as a family, I think most people would say that it's worth it for just the reduced logistical stress that's going to come from it.
Yeah, when the difference is that small, it's like I don't think it's really a second thought. but
yeah, well, and one other thing too, again, Frontier and Spirit are very point to point type low cost carriers, and they don't have the operational redundancy in place. So when things go wrong, they go very wrong. We've talked about it before, and you see it here where a Spirit flight gets delayed and people are kind of stranded for 2 or 3 days until they can kind of get caught up. So not saying that always happens. They operate plenty of flights a day just fine. But in those particular cases, just the nature of their route network structure, when things go wrong, they go real wrong real quick. Whereas like Delta has essentially like a flight every other hour from Orlando to Atlanta. So, you know, super easy in time of trouble or difficulty to have lots of redundancy or other options. So super important for family of four traveling together.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Cool. All right. So we got into Orlando. Where are we staying? We're staying at the Voco Kissimmee Orlando. And this is a brand I had never heard of. It's an IHG brand. Points are 16,000 per night. So transfer over to IHG. So this is going to let us stay for 3 nights in a, you know, 2 queen bed room, which is, again, perfect utility for a family of four. Cash rates here for a lot of dates I was looking at, like $120 to $150. So super inexpensive.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the theme of this episode. This is not a Ritz-Carlton we're staying at, but honestly, I was pretty pleased with looking at the photos of the hotel. Like, nice, classic, looks recently renovated, kind of has like a retro feel to it, but an updated retro feel, like which was kind of nice. So great pool, everything you would need in a hotel that you're probably not going to be spending a lot of time at. So
all you need to say, Matt, is zero grasshoppers. And I think,
yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I can't confirm, but I did not see grasshoppers mentioned in the reviews. So could be cockroaches, but no grasshoppers. Who knows? This is the South.
One interesting thing here too, this is going to be a little bit of a gimme for you, Matt. You mentioned cash rates at 120 a night.
Yep.
If you're booking that at even 1 cent per point,
correct,
that's actually 4 nights that you could book as well.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. I was considering that, but also IG, kind of like I mentioned earlier, is a routine or semi-regular transfer bonus. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I say semi-regular. We have seen some IHG transfer bonuses in a not too infrequent manner recently. So if you time that up well, you could stretch that even further. But yeah, if you find a stretch of nights where a super low cash rate, then yeah, absolutely. Travel Portal could be a great play here.
And although I say that, it's funny how the math starts to math, because IHG does fourth night free, right? So that
yep.
3 night for mm-hmm. 48,000 yeah. would be the same for 4 nights as well. So either way,
yep. yeah.
the same
yeah.
amount exactly. of points, you can stretch it.
How do you navigate the hotels when you're traveling with your full family? Do you do separate rooms, or you try and find rooms that are large enough for all of you, or is Airbnb the way to go?
So I typically do hotel rooms. I mean, right now, you know, in the States and in much of the Caribbean, like, I have no problem booking a hotel room for the four of us, you know, two queens. I mean, yeah. my kids are still younger. That's fine. So we haven't quite had to deal yet with, you know, some of the restrictions of Europe.
Yeah.
You know, we
yeah.
have a couple times, but we had a traveling grandmother with us, which I highly recommend. So we're able to put,
yes,
you know, two over there, and it kind of worked out. So this will be an experience, and we'll have to see how this goes, you know, as I get older and when we travel to those countries that aren't, you know, conducive for families.
Yeah, it does make things a little more expensive if you have to double up on the rooms, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
That's when you get them their own loyalty programs and you make them start earning points.
Everywhere that I can, I've already done that. So they have a lot of award numbers in different places.
Oh, yeah.
But I will say, you know, even with the one room, one of the things that's kind of like one of our non-negotiables when we do travel is I really, like, we have to have a balcony, because it's our way to escape once the kids go to sleep. My husband and I can go out on the balcony and yeah. enjoy some time and not be stuck in there having to go to sleep with them. So that's one of the things I always look for when I'm when I'm booking a hotel.
That's really smart. I hadn't thought about that.
What advice do you have for parents who are dreading like the long flight with the young kids, keeping them entertained, managing their sleep? It's kind of just very broadly, you know, how do you think about that, and what advice do you have for others who are eyeing it?
It gets easier. okay, so we have been the parents on the plane with the kid that is just unruly and like the parents are completely unprepared. That was us when my oldest was 15 months. We flew to Hawaii, 6-hour flight. I just had no idea what I needed or anything. And I had nothing. I didn't have enough snacks. I didn't have enough anything. By the end of the flight, like people from the other side of the plane were giving us like toys and snacks and like whatever. The flight attendants knew my son's name by the end. Like it was just bad. And since then we've learned you need a lot of snacks on flights and you just need a lot of new like dollar store toys that they have never seen. And once they hit like 3.5, their attention can be held by a screen for like a long enough time. And then you can like read a book. That's what I've learned.
That's when you've made it.
Maybe. Yes. That's when you know you've arrived. So, and my kids are great travelers now, but they haven't always been that way. So I think practice is my biggest tip. It's like a muscle. And Katie probably has better tips than that.
No, yeah, I agree. I mean, I think our kids are pretty good travelers. You know, they had their moments. I think when they were babies, it was just the hardest because there was no reasoning with them. There was no explaining. So, you know, I do remember having to get up and stand near the back by the flight attendants when one of my kids was crying. But, you know, for the most part, I think, you know, yes, definitely all the snacks, all of the Dollar Tree board games and things. I fill their backpacks with all kinds of new things. I don't let them see it until they're on the plane. And then they have a lot of fun. The window clings work really well for the airplane. Just make sure you remember to take them off when you're done. And then, you know, even just like asking for extra cups. I did that when I had, you know, babies. You know, the flight attendants will bring you just the plastic cups. They have a lot of fun playing with that. They don't really, you know, even need toys necessarily. And then, you know, a pacifier. If you have a young baby on a flight, the swallowing motion really helps with their ear pressure. Yeah, I think all those things. And then, you know, definitely the screens and everything. My son also, he has motion sickness. So I don't travel without Ziploc bags, gallon size Ziploc bags everywhere we go. They're so useful for a million things. But, you know, but they're really great. If he thinks he's going to throw up, he can throw up in a bag and we throw it away when we get, you know, off the plane and there's no mess, no, nothing to clean up. Works great in the car as well. If you're getting in a taxi, an Uber, anything like that, he has almost thrown up. We've had to stop an Uber and say, you know, please let us out. He's going to throw up. They were very quick to let us out. but, you know, he made it. He was fine. So, you know, those kinds of strategies. But then those Ziploc bags also work really well. Like if you're, you know, going somewhere where you have wet clothing or somebody had an accident or, you know, whatever, you can just like throw it in a Ziploc. If you have, you know, you bought food and you didn't eat it all, you can throw that into an extra Ziploc, like all kinds of things. So definitely don't travel without Ziploc bags. And I did find out the hard way. I forgot to pack them for our Europe trip. And usually my husband's like, oh, don't worry, you know, whatever we forget, I always think I'm going to forget something, you know. It's like, whatever we forget, we'll just buy when we get there. It's not a big deal. They don't have Ziploc bags in Europe. I found that out. I went to every single store in all the different countries we hit. Not a single one had anything resembling a Ziploc bag. So I will never forget that again.
That's a great tip. I feel like someone needs to like sell like a parent belt that has like a Ziploc pouch, like a holster, and then you got the dollar store toys. It's just like, I'm ready.
Yeah. Pampers are great too. I bring Papa Pampers for the hotel rooms. And so we just all throw our clothes and everything in there. And then I have those little like laundry bags that go like a really big laundry bag. And so when you're done, I don't like to pack all my stuff back up when it's dirty. So I just throw it all in that big laundry bag, throw the laundry bag into the suitcase and we're good to go.
Yeah, great tips. The only one I would add is I feel like there are very few tantrums that on an airplane with kids that can't be solved with a giant bag of Dum Dums. So just having like 50 suckers on call, and then bonus points for if you can do that for other parents who are in that situation that Ray was describing, which I think we've all been in, like kids screaming, you're standing in the galley with the flight attendants doing everything you can, but it's like a guardian angel appears with a Dum Dum and it's like, ah, everyone's thrilled. Like airlines should just stock those. Mm-hmm.
They should. And you know what? I thought of one other thing. It's a pain, but don't be afraid to bring the car seat on the plane. Because when your kid is in that age of like where they're just walking, but like they're not old enough to understand why they can't get down and run around, we bring the car seat on the plane, you buckle them in, and then it's like they're in the car and they're safe, they're used to it, and they can't get out. So, yeah.
We do the same. And I guess I'll also mention that there's some thought for parents that needs to be put into particular like choice of flight or aircraft particularly. We have been in situations before where flying premium cabin and it's like a herringbone set up with the walls and it's like, hey, you need to put your 3-year-old out of sight for all of takeoff and landing. And I hope they don't lose their mind and get up. Like, good luck with that. So you have to kind of look at how are the seats configured? Can we be in a position to maybe assist children without getting out of our seats? And in particular, that Lufthansa is fantastic for that. I know everyone kind of bags on their business class because it's kind of just whatever as a product. But the one thing it does have is you are very close to the people next to you. So it's wonderful for families. And really, most airlines, in my experience, have at least one plane configuration that is a bit more like that, which tends to be a little bit easier to find a word space for because that is the opposite of what most other people are looking for. Like, hey, I'd like to be closer to my seatmate and like aisle access. Who cares? You know, got to get those dum-dums passed around more efficiently.
Yeah.
And that's a wrap on this family travel compilation. Thanks so much for listening. We really hope you picked up a tip or two to help make your family trip a little more rewarding next time. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love if you left us a review or shared it with a fellow travel-loving parent. And make sure you subscribe so you don't miss another episode. We'll see you next time.